Now we dive into Wisconsin politics, taking developments one at a time. Some roadmap here. Your thoughts on the lawsuit over the GOP-backed Michael Gableman probe, who was found in contempt by a Dane County Circuit judge over how his Office of Special Counsel handled open records requests. And we start with the Wisconsin Elections Commission, its new chair, how you see the work of this body going forward. 800-642-1234. J.R. Ross is editor of WisPolitics and co-host of the state politics podcast Rewind on Wisconsin Eye's Public Affairs Network. J.R., welcome back to the Ideas Network.
How are you doing this morning?
I'm doing well. So Rewind here to Friday, and the Wisconsin Elections Commission elects Republican attorney Don Millis as its new chair, 5-1 vote. What can you tell us about Millis?
He's a attorney. He was actually served on the old election commission way back before the Government Accountability Board. He was an appointee to the new elections commission, one that was replaced the Government Accountability Board, appointed by then Senate Leader Scott Fitzgerald, resigned at the time after a little while because he had a conflict with work. But he's back now. He's been around for a long time. He's known this stuff. And what's interesting is he's going right from being a new member to the chair immediately, because the only alternative was Bob Spindell, and that was probably not going to happen.
We're going to get to Spindell in a moment, but can you explain what is involved in being chair? How essential is the job?
Oh, you know, you run the meeting. You kind of, I mean, like, it takes four votes of that commission to do anything, but you are in charge of the meeting and help set the agenda. You certify the vote. There's this process that became controversial the first time that I can recall in 2020, where Ann Jacobs, who is now the past chair, certified the results of the presidential election. It was one of several steps that happens after presidential election. She certified it, I think it was on a Sunday, to try and get things moving. So you were going to go to a lawsuit or a recount, I think it was. So usually it's no big deal, but it became a big deal during that election. But it's not like you can dictate what they're going to do and, you know, force things through. You have to have four votes. That commission split 3-3 between Democratic and Republican appointees, was supposed to forge compromise. That, alas, does not happen very often with that commission. Often it's a 3-3 split on big issues. But you, at least you run the meeting and kind of help kind of guide things through the process.
Millis has said state election laws need to be changed. Is there any knowledge of what he has in mind?
No, not yet. And we're going to watch that, because the commission can recommend things, but it's the legislature and the governor who ultimately change the law. So, for example, one thing that came up this past week was with the challenge to the Tim Michaels nomination papers, right? Or the challenge to nomination papers in general. During the hearing on Friday, the seven-hour hearing that I sat through, several times there were comments from members of the commission saying it shouldn't be this hard. When you're having nomination papers and there are questions about signatures, it shouldn't be this difficult. There should be an easier way to do this, or a more clear guideline on what's going on. There is that issue. Also, the timing issue, because we go from having that hearing on Friday about challenges nomination papers, you're not happy with the commission's decision, you have to go to court. Well, ballots have to go to press by like the middle of this week. In fact, just moments ago, Jeff Mandel, who is the attorney who led the complaint against the Michaels nomination papers, tweeted out that they're not going to seek court review of the election commission decision dismissing the complaint, because his words, not because they're wrong, but because an appeal would strain election administration. This issue also came up during 2020 with the Green Party's nomination papers. If you call back then, the Green Party, the vice presidential candidate for the Green Party, moved during the window to circulate nomination papers in Wisconsin. They had addresses, two different addresses on the papers, and didn't fix that. The Elections Commission deadlocked on a challenge to nomination papers, couldn't get four votes to put them on the ballot. The Green Party then waited about a week to file a lawsuit. The Supreme Court of Wisconsin said, look, you waited too long. We're sorry, but ballots are already going out, and you're now asking us to put you on the ballot and halt this process. There wasn't enough time. Another example of something where commissioners have said, we should do something differently than what we're doing right now.
Yes, and so some really good historical backstory there. I'm just going to reintroduce you for a moment here as we talk with J.R. Ross, Wispolitics editor, looking at the Wisconsin Elections Commission after its latest meeting and other developments at the Capitol. You can join in at 800-642-1234. J.R., just returning to the Elections Commission and Robert Spindell, who was the other Republican commission member running to chair the panel. And he was the one who had posed as a fake presidential elector following the 2020 election. What do you know about why he wasn't elected and the tension there about being that fake Trump elector?
Well, again, you need four votes for anything on the Elections Commission. There was no way you were going to get a Democratic appointee to the commission to support Bob Spindell for chair. And that's for a couple of reasons. One, there is the whole false elector thing. Being part of that, there are complaints filed over that, lawsuits filed over that, that Spindell was a subject of. Granted, the commission dismissed one of the complaints filed with it, but still, that was an issue. Even more than that, Spindell has been had a contentious relationship with Democrats on the commission the whole time. They've not got along very well, so they're not going to want to give the gavel to somebody that they don't particularly like working with sometimes or find frustrating to work with. Spindell also spoke, for example, in I think it was December of 2020 at a rally claiming the election was stolen from Donald Trump. You know, things like that are not going to instill confidence in Democrats about having him being chair. So that, you know, that's a big part of the issue, just those things. Now, for instance, Spindell's perspective, he had argued that he should be chair because actually I talked to him last week. He cited a story that one of my former colleagues did, Pat Pobletti's now out in Colorado and doing very well, but he wrote a story about how before Spindell got on the commission, most of the votes were 6-0. Once Spindell got there, the number of 3-3 votes went up dramatically. To Spindell, that was because Republicans were no longer quote unquote caving in all the time and fighting. In his mind, as a Republican appointee, he should fight for the Republican point of view on election laws. That also didn't sit well with Democrats.
Earlier this year, the House Select Committee investigating January 6th, they expanded their probe into fake Trump electors. What are you watching for there?
Well, just if anything happens, if there are any kind of penalties, then we have, you know, for example, Andrew Hitt, former state chair of the Republican Party. He was one of them. Spindell. It's been pretty radio silent about what's been happening since then. Now, again, there are some lawsuits or legal actions filed in Wisconsin. I don't know they're going to go very far. So far, the ones that we've seen about January 6th haven't really taken off, but it's out there. And what's clear is that the Democrats are trying to hold those folks accountable by finding ways to go after them. Andrew Hitt again, he's an attorney. There was a complaint filed about his professional conduct by being an attorney who participated in this endeavor. So that's something else you have to keep an eye on.
We have Wispolitics editor J.R. Ross covering the state capitol for over 20 years, giving us analysis and context. Join in on the Wisconsin Elections Commission primaries, how state races are shaping up heading into the midterms. 800-642-1234. We will pick this up in a moment for more State Cap with J.R. Ross here on the Ideas Network. You're with us for the State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Next on to the Gableman probe, we'll take a look at that. Also, primary races shaping up about 8 weeks out now from the August primary. Join in on Wisconsin politics and what you want to ask a veteran state political reporter, 800-642-1234. Wispolitics editor J.R. Ross with us for about 12 more minutes. J.R., let's look at the Michael Gableman courtroom on Friday. There was Gableman was in Dane County Circuit Court Friday, where he'd been subpoenaed to answer questions about his review of the 2020 election and how he handled open records requests. Gableman refusing to answer questions, accusing Judge Frank Remington of bias. Let's listen.
You have a right to conduct and control your courtroom, Judge, but you don't have a right to act as an advocate for one party over the other. I want a personal counsel. If you are putting jail on the table, I want a personal, I want an attorney to represent me personally. I will not answer any more questions. I see you have a jail officer here. You want to put me in jail, Judge Remington? I'm not going to be railroaded.
Audio courtesy there of Wisconsin Eye. What did you make of this courtroom and the back and forth?
I have not been on the stand in front of a judge before, but I would, if I had, I would not have taken Michael Gilman's tact with a judge who has my fate in his hands. You could tell the Gilman chafed at the idea of being subjected to this proceeding. I mean, this is a guy, he's a former circuit court judge, former Supreme Court justice. He did not think this was something that he should be subjected to. There was a certain, I guess, call it arrogance about how he was being treated in this process. There also was, I think, one of the TV stations had a hot mic moment where Gableman was kind of taking shots at Remington over his perceived bias, and that this was some kind of high point for Judge Remington. That's, again, not how I would approach being in a courtroom before a judge who can penalize me, but that's his, you know, that's the decision that he made. But this thing has continued to be an issue for Assembly Republicans and Robin Voss, the Speaker of the Assembly, because it keeps causing incidents like this, and it keeps costing taxpayers money. We're up now to about, so the original budget for this investigation was $676,000. Mm-hmm. As of last week, they'd spent about just shy of $500,000 from that. But that doesn't count the legal bills, because we have three open records lawsuits that have been filed by American Oversight. We also have the lawsuit where AG Josh Call has challenged the ability of Gableman to force subjects to give a private deposition at his private office rather than giving testimony before a public hearing for the legislature. The legal bills from that. We also have in Waukesha County Court an ongoing proceeding where Gableman is trying to get a Waukesha County judge to order the Waukesha County Sheriff to possibly jail the mayors of Green Bay, Madison, Racine, and then city officials in several cities if they don't comply with the subpoenas. Their legal bills from that. We're north of, you know, $400,000 last point when I checked my latest spreadsheet on that. So we're north of $900,000 so far.
In legal costs. Okay.
Well, between legal fees plus the $500,000 they spent on the investigation.
Okay.
So we're north of $900,000 for those two things. You get bad headlines out of it for Robin Voss and some of the Republicans, and you get a cost of taxpayers. That's causing an issue as well.
So Gableman, as we heard in the clip, was really hyper-focused on jail time and kept talking about jail over and over. What was the response by Judge Remington?
Well, I don't think he really appreciated the perception for people in the room. He didn't really appreciate Gableman's conduct. I guess I'll put it that way. He didn't really appreciate that. But he's raised this issue because that's one of the penalties for contempt.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I believe there's going to be a formal order at some point because about what the penalties are going to be for Washington. I don't know what's going to rise to jailing anybody at this point, but it is going to be another bad headline out of this for the whole investigation.
So Remington at a later time will determine sanctions. And so we can expect like a written order of what this contempt will involve.
Yeah, that was my understanding from the hearing on Friday.
Now, what about the open records requests here? Gableman has released hundreds of records under pressure from American Oversight attorneys. What have they been wanting here? What is involved? What is at stake in this lawsuit?
Well, they're trying to get a hold of all kinds of things. And the issue now with this contempt order is that I think it was like 80 pages roughly. You have to forgive me if I'm off by a little bit, but there were some pages that weren't turned over at the right time or when they first were asked, or there was some issue with those papers. And so that's what it's about. Did they comply with it? And during a hearing recently, actually the middle of last week, the Office of Special Counsel, i.e. Gableman's office, seemed to suggest this was a clerical error by one of his aides, which Remington raised the issue of, okay, wait a second. If you're going to pin this on this guy, maybe he should have his own lawyers, because if that's your tact, I'm kind of curious about that and what's going on. So the question is, did they comply with these things? was fully transparent. Gableman said after the hearing on Friday that, yes, he deleted some things that he did not think were relevant to his investigation. And if he kept, I'm paraphrasing him, if he kept every scrap of paper came across his desk in this thing, he'd need a warehouse. Mm-hmm. That wasn't realistic.
Mm-hmm.
So, but this is a taxpayer-funded review of the 2020 election. That's not how it works on public record. So, I mean, I'm not a lawyer. I'm not going to tell you what he has to keep or what he shouldn't, but I don't know that he's kept the spirit of the law at this point, and there are people who think he definitely hasn't, and that's causing some of this issue.
Is there any idea to the extent of the deletions, the extent of the destruction of documents, and the nature of them?
Not from what I saw in the comments after Friday's hearing. He kind of gave a vague answer about what he's deleting stuff that's not relevant. And his attorney, during a hearing, and they all run together after a while, but there was a hearing a few months ago where his attorney said, look, he deleted some stuff. If it's not relevant to the investigation, we don't keep it. We don't think it's necessary. Again, I don't know what that line is under the law or if Michael Gableman's keeping the spirit of the open records law with what he's deleting.
So as you mentioned, you know, these lawsuits seem to be all running together in a way. What will ultimately happen here? What is the goal?
The goal from American Oversight, I mean, quite frankly, they want to get the records, but they also want to kind of keep pressure on this investigation because Democrats think it's a waste of taxpayer money. Mm. This is part of the, you know, highlighting things that they're not doing properly in the minds of American Oversight. So there's that. We're going to have this continued fight about open records. We're going to have a fight in court over the next few months about whether Gableman has the power to force these folks to do these private depositions. The Waukesha County case, the hearings have pushed back to August 30th, I think it is, or August 20th. Mm-hmm. So we're past the primary in August, bumping up against the November election for that going on. And remember, this is all supposed to be done by last fall. Robin Voss, when he started this entire thing, said we're going to get recommendations from Gableman by the fall. We'll use those recommendations for a package of legislative action that we'll put on the floor of both houses and pass to, in his words, clean up elections in Wisconsin. We are well past that now. And the question is, when's it going to end? Because once these lawsuits are done about like his authority, Gableman could pick back up the review of the 2020 election and start to try and get more depositions or records or whatnot. That's the big question. When's it all going to end? And what's it going to cost when it's all over?
And you'll keep up with that spreadsheet, I'd imagine. Talking with J.R. Ross, State Politics Roundup here, editor of WisPolitics. You can join in with your questions, 800-642-1234, or email ideas at WPR.org. You'd mentioned earlier, as we talked about, Tim Michaels, Republican candidate for governor, entered the race in late April, joining the three other candidates who are vying for the Republican nomination. We've got former Lieutenant Governor Rebecca Clayfish, State Representative Tim Rantham, business consultant Kevin Nicholson. How is this race shaping up ahead of the August primary?
Well, the Trump endorsement of Michaels obviously was a boost for his campaign. Now, Donald Trump has a pretty good record endorsing Republicans in federal races, right? U.S. Mm-hmm. Senate, Congress, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
His record for gubernatorial primaries is not nearly as good. Down in Georgia, Governor Kemp won his primary by 50 points, even though Trump endorsed an opponent, a former Senator Perdue. Out in Idaho, the Trump backup candidate lost by 20 points, the sitting governor. So it's not as clear that it's as powerful in a race for governor. What people have told me is Michaels has to take this endorsement and use it wisely. Go out and sell it to Republican primary voters. Tout it. Within hours of the endorsement a couple weeks ago, Michaels had recut an ad that he was doing about immigration to add in the Trump endorsement. That was a fairly smart thing to do. The challenge for him, people tell me, is Rebecca Clayfish has done a lot of work for a long time to build up a support with the Republican base. So Michaels can't just go out there and run nice ads about what a great guy he is. At some point, he has to try and take this away from Rebecca Clayfish. How is he going to do that? They call him compare and contrast ads.
Mm-hmm.
I might call them attack ads.
Mm-hmm.
But is he going to throw kind of the proverbial political punch at Rebecca Clayfish? Now, the counter to that is Clayfish hasn't taken a punch at Michaels yet. So what's that going to look like? Michaels, you know, there are issues about where he's lived the last decade. He has homes out in Connecticut and New York City. fair questions about where has he been on the big Republican fights the last 12 years, things like right to work, you know, Act 10, like where has he been? He's tied to the road building industry, which wasn't a big fan of things like right to work. So there are issues like that he'll have to address, but those two are the front runners. I mean, it's clear that those two are the front runners. Michael seems to be boxing out Kevin Nicholson because of the same profile, right? Mm-hmm. Businessmen, outsider, veterans, that kind of thing. Nicholson can't write a big personal check like Michaels can. And then you have Tim Ranthem, who may be closest to Trump's heart in terms of the claims about the 2020 election, but he's not getting much traction or attention, so he might be as 5 to 7% in that primary. So really, it's kind of Clayfish and Michaels and who can take the nomination in the end.
Okay, and we only have a few seconds here, but Governor Evers announcing a special session on the 22nd to take up a repeal the state's 1849 abortion ban. Do you imagine that the special session will happen?
Oh, they'll gavel in and out in a matter of seconds. They've done that on things like guns, on the tax cut he wanted to do, the rebate he wanted to do. Republicans aren't interested in this. One, philosophically, they don't agree with relaxing limits on abortion, or at least not enough of them to do it. And two, they're not going to come in the summer at Evers' call and try to do something like this.
JR, thank you for joining us.
Hey, thanks for having me.
JR Ross is editor of WisPolitics.com, co-hosts the state politics podcast Rewind on Wisconsin Eye's Public Affairs Network. This is the State Capitol Report on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.